Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Hi, I'm Paul, the founder of New Zealand Sports Radio, and you know what, the rugby nut on here. Well, I say the rugby nut, which is absolutely totally untrue because we've got lots of rugby nuts on the channel. I'm just one of them, and I get to talk about rugby every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. So do come and join me on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. Talking about rugby and more rugby. Joining me this, oh, by the way, folks, if you want to have reviews of the actual games, then this is not the place to do it. The place to do it is our review show. That happens at 8 p.m. on a Sunday evening. We go through all the action from the weekend and talk about the actual games there. Here, we talk about all the other kind of stuff around it. We're going to be talking about some of the comments from Tony Rowe around Exeter Chiefs and how the RFU just do not show the love for using their players. We'll talk about the All Blacks versus provincial rugby because our very own Stephen Harris had a little chat with Ian Foster the other day on the old talkback radio somewhere. Asked him a good old question. So hey, we'll have some fun and games chatting about that one. We're going to talk about COVID bubbles and what's been happening in Europe a little bit as well, and whether rugby players are going to be a good COVID people or not. And then let's have a quick chat around the Old Black Ferns as well. So yeah, we'll be talking about that. There are some really interesting games coming up on the November the 14th around the whole thing around women's rugby, which I'll be trying to dig out because I've just gone and lost my link to what's been going on. But I know there's a whole bunch of stuff going on then up that day in Auckland over there in Henderson. So we'll be having a chat. I want to have a chat about that as well. If you are joining us live, you can always join us in the live chat as well. Drop us some comments in there, some questions. We'll always love your interaction. I've got Simon Hughes already in the chat. Nice for you to join us, Simon. Saying congratulations to Exeter on winning another trophy. Yes, they are dual champions in Europe, both European champions and Gallagher Premiership champions. Congratulations to them on what's happening on the field. It's the off the field issues that I have a problem with, but we'll be diving into that in a moment. And just got to welcome Mr. Harris to the show. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Paul. Once again, privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM talking rugby, going to some interesting places tonight, I believe.
Yes. Okay. So, essentially, places like talking about off-field stuff mainly, rather than on-field stuff. Let's kick off then with that Exeter piece. Now, yes, Exeter Chiefs have had a fantastic season, topped the Gallagher Premiership quite comfortably. Happy to lose a few games towards the end there to rotate and make the players fresh for the European Champions Cup, where they went. Made it to the final for their first time in their history and won it as well. So congratulations there. They then backed that up by winning their second ever Gallagher Premiership title. I think the first one was an Aviva Premiership, but anyway, Premiership titles, beating Wasps in the final in a real close one. Let's be honest, in some horrible conditions. And yes, look, on the pitch, what Mr. Baxter does there, Rob Baxter, their head coach, and the way they've brought players through their academy to make up that team and squad and play is fantastic. It might not be the most scintillating and exciting rugby to watch, but boy, is it effective, and haven't they done well. However, here we go. Club versus country. And Tony Rowe decided he would come out and have a quick chat. He goes, says, "We employ the players. They are our players. Ooh. Being forced to release them for so many international games is not good. We don't get compensated enough. The reality is that we breed these guys for ourselves. We didn't breed them for England." He says, and what's he go on to say? The second piece, second part of the tweet. We didn't breed them for England. England can get too greedy. They are very quick to run the other way when we want money. At the moment, we are desperate for money in the Premiership to stay alive. Wow. Some hard talking there from Tony Rowe, isn't it, Stephen?
Very, very much so. And listen, I've come around to their way of thinking, because we'll obviously get to the New Zealand module rather sooner than later. But just before we move on from the Exeter Chiefs, I think the story of Gareth Stenson, the Irishman, is a wonderful story, Paul. He's a player who wasn't wanted by Ulster and pretty much thought his career was well and truly done and dusted. Obviously, may have moved around a couple of other clubs as well, but boy, somebody told him towards the end of his career, if he'd end up with a European title in an English premiership, you'd take that every day of the week and twice on Sundays. So credit to him.
Look, the way they brought through players, Chip, on the whole, and unheralded players until recently when they brought players in like Hogg and Richard Gray. Before that, basically, generally not named players. Sure, they had Thomas Waldron and Julian Salvi from Tigers, but let's be honest, Leicester Tigers didn't want them. They decided that they would pass their sell-by date, and Exeter took one and they played really well for them. So, no, look, on that side of things, done very well. But a bit disingenuous from Tony Rowe here. First off, why did this idea that they breed players? God, it sounds like some sort of horse breeder, where they kind of match stallions and mares and to breed their players. Rubbish. They don't breed players. They do coach players, and they have academies. Sure, they do. Those academies that are paid for by the RFU. Now, do the clubs put extra money into them? They probably do as well. But you know what? The RFU, one of the reasons that we've seen the England go much better in the under-20s competitions in the Junior Rugby World Championship over recent years, winning it in 2011, for example, is 2011 or 2013, anyway, around about then, is because the RFU instigated regional academies for each club and put money in and helped found those. So this idea that all this academy stuff is just done purely off the club's back is bullshit. Put bluntly. Then he goes to say, they don't pay us enough. Really? Well, the club signed a £200 million deal, back in 2016 for the release of these players. The clubs signed up to that. They agreed to the number. And you know what? One of the reasons that the RFU has been sacking people recently and making people redundant and is making a loss is because they signed up a deal that basically was giving away more money than they're earning. It was a bad deal for the RFU. The RFU gave the clubs more money than was coming in, which is why the RFU now is struggling. So this idea that suddenly that the RFU has got all this special spare dosh sort of just lying around they could help the clubs out with is, again, absolute rubbish. One of the things that's bankrupting the RFU at the moment is the clubs themselves, none of whom make a profit apart from Exeter Chiefs. Exeter Chiefs are now struggling because they make a profit off their conference centre. Running conferences during a lockdown in COVID doesn't work. Hence, you can see why he's now talking about trying to get more money out of the RFU. To me, it's very disingenuous of him personally. Austin says a rugby stud farm down there in Devon and Cornwall, maybe. So look, I'm going to be releasing a video probably this week or next week. It's going to be entitled "How I Fell, Why I Fell Out of Love with Exeter Chiefs." They are my team in the UK, or have been for the past decade. I am having to seriously reconsider that now, and I say that video will be coming out in the next few days around that, because of the behaviour of essentially Tony Rowe, to be honest with you. Any other comments in that space, or just happy with my little rant at the top of the show?
I think in conclusion, it's basically very clear that the two need each other and have got to work a lot harder together. Paul, if you want to find a common goal, because if somebody's burning the candle for you at one end to make another end happen, somewhere in the middle, you've got to find some medium ground. I wasn't aware of the money that's put into the academies, but if that's what England Rugby or the rugby union are doing, for crying out loud, I think those comments definitely way over the top.
So there we go. I'm sure we'll end up with a whole bunch of comments now on YouTube of people watching going, "Paul, you're talking rubbish," because I'll tell you, a lot of people on Twitter have been going, "Yep, what he's saying is entirely true." I don't believe so. Also, look, not only do the clubs do well out of the union when, but also it's how a lot of people find their first way into rugby, is watching the Six Nations. That's where all the casual fans are, and then they can become sort of club fans afterwards. We'll talking about the top and the bottom working in harmony, Stephen. Would you like to let me know the question that you put to Ian Foster at the weekend?
Well, I had an opportunity via Talkback Radio to ask a question, and obviously a lot of people were asking in and around the All Blacks. Now, something I'm very passionate about, and if you want to jump on and see the post in its entirety, that's on the New Zealand Sport Radio Facebook site. So have a look. Read through it. Let me know what you think, if you want to add something in. But basically, to cut a long story short, I'm very passionate about club and Mitre 10. In fact, I'm probably more passionate about those two levels of rugby than I am in terms of Super Rugby and All Black Rugby, because I believe the rest of it pretty much takes care of itself if your foundation is strong. And of course, earlier this year, we had the McKinsey report, the McKinsey Management Consulting Group based out of America, who put together a report for New Zealand Rugby Football Union that highlighted many issues in the game, and some of it was in and around engagement. That's something that's very important to me. Attendances that are dropping away at the time, not just in Mitre 10 Cup rugby, but also Super Rugby as well. Now, one of the best games we've actually seen this year in the Mitre 10 Cup, which happened to double as a Ranfurly Shield as well, was the Canterbury Taranaki game, with some fortunately with most of the All Blacks, if not all the All Blacks, on board. And it was a fantastic game of rugby, and it's fantastic to see. But we also have a lot of fringe All Blacks as well. And these days, as we all know, the All Blacks take on board a very, very big squad. And this squad seems to grow exponentially each week with the All Black coach. And my question is, why are you carrying so many players? But I put the question to Ian Foster that earlier this year we had a McKinsey report that actually stated the lack of engagement and how important the Mitre 10 Cup is to New Zealand rugby. And I basically said, listen, is there some middle ground that we can actually find here, as opposed to seeing guys sitting in the stand at test matches when they could be away playing for their Mitre 10 Cup provinces? Because I know of many supporters that I talk to throughout the country. They may have a team that only has two or three All Blacks. I used the example of Manawatu last year. Howdy, Nocturnal Rights. used the example last year when they had Jackson Hemapua and also Nani Lamapi on deck. They were a really good competitive side that could give any team in the Mitre 10 Cup on a given day. Now, what was frustrating, they would get called into camps and never get used, and you'd see them sitting in the stand. Of course, Mr. Foster replied to me by saying, "Well, I'm a little bit offended by what you're saying. These guys that come into the squad play an important part, especially in and around training, adding very physical opposition. And you use the example of Akira Iwani being used in a situation where he played the niggly guy in the training for him, holding the hit bag, adding a bit of physicality, and also the off-field stuff. That I don't know what that off-field stuff is, but, you know, my question was pretty much, wouldn't these guys be better playing Mitre 10 Cup rugby, once again, engaging with those fans that are getting left out? Because we are in danger, and it's definitely headed that way, of being just All Black supporters. I want to be a rugby supporter that supports all levels of the game. And, yeah, quite frankly, I found his answer quite unsatisfactory, and I very much told him that. I go, no, I don't like your answer, but good luck for your game against the Wallabies this week. But once again, I come back to this engagement piece with New Zealand rugby. Mitre 10 Cup is important. It's a damn good competition. And have they not learnt anything from the report, I suppose?
Well, there's a number of things from that report, weren't there, that I think came out. Whilst they said that's in that report that engagement was an important thing. Now, let's be clear here, folks. The report has not been released publicly, right? So, so we are going through basically what we've heard from our discussions with various people around the provinces, also what we've read in the media. That's reportedly been inside those reports. So, look, we haven't, or I haven't, Stephen might have done, but if he has, he hasn't forwarded it to me, the actual report. I've not actually seen it. So we are going a bit of hearsay, a bit of Chinese whispers might be going on here as to what is really in there. But, yeah, the engagement piece is there. Another suggestion that was also part of it was basically to make the Mitre 10 Cup amateur and to do away with it being a high performance channel, and to have five academies throughout the country, funnily enough, associated with the Super Rugby franchises instead. So, yes, engagement was part of it, but also was, hey, we don't have the cash to run that many professional clubs. So, hey, you know what? We need to find a cash cutting measure as well. So, there were a number of bits to it. Let's be honest. I think a lot of provincial CEOs were very much, I think were a bit concerned and a bit put out and surprised by what was included in there. But yes, you're right. Engagement was a big piece of it. What we're seeing here essentially is that Ian Foster and the All Blacks coaching group basically don't care about anything else apart from the All Blacks. Now, to a certain degree, that's what they should do. They're paid to be All Blacks coaches, right? They're not paid to care about New Zealand rugby from top to bottom. They are paid to win All Blacks test matches. One of the problems we have, though, is that essentially the most powerful person in rugby in New Zealand is the All Blacks head coach. And what they say they get, because there is this piece, or basically within New Zealand rugby, is the All Blacks brand is where all our money comes from. The All Blacks have to be successful. We have to give them everything they want. And that means everything else just gets run straight over. And we're seeing that with, as you say, let's take 50 players to Japan and Europe for a tour. Let's take players out of Super Rugby games just for a training weekend. Let's take players out of Super Rugby, out of Mitre 10 Cup to hold a couple of tackle bags and then dress up in a nice suit and that we give them for the weekend that they're told they're never allowed to wear again unless they're an All Blacks duty, because the marketing people say so. So it becomes it is very much, they are very, very tunnel visioned. And to be high performance winning at the top level, some would say you have to be that, though.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I just think somewhere along it's going to come at a cost. I know Aaron's just said, I'm thinking of what Fozzie said would have come from past coaches as well. It probably would have, but I just thought there might, after the report, there might have been a change of mindset. Hey guys, this is what you need to fix. Here's your opportunity to start fixing it. But on saying that, they've done absolutely nothing about it. They don't care. And at this stage, it's almost like they are driving the Mitre 10 Cup towards, like you say, amateurism, if that's what it's gonna take at the end of the day. But boy, there's a lot of people out there who actually love their unions. I've met them. I've seen forums. People love Mitre 10 Cup. It may not show in numbers, but you know, you disrespect it, and you know, something's going to give somewhere along the line. And even more so if the All Blacks fall over. You know.
Well, let's just go back to back to Aaron's comment there for a quick second. So he says, I'm thinking what Fozzie said would have come from past coaches as well, i.e. company line. Well, yes, it does come from past coaches, but that's because, let's see, our past coaches were Graham Henry, who obviously said, hey, you've got to hire my assistant coach to be my successor, who said, hey, you've got to hire my assistant coach to be my successor. And by the way, put Ted on the selection panel as well to make sure he gets in. So look, it's a company line because basically it's the same coaching squad for the past, what are we now, 20 odd years, isn't it? You're going on towards 20 years. It's the same guys who are in there. And for Ted to come out and go, oh, I think it's wrong, I would have hired Razor. What do you mean you would have hired Razor? You were in the bloody selection panel. You gave Razor an absolute drilling during the selection meetings, according to what he said. You ripped him to pieces. And then to come out in the media a couple of weeks ago and suggest that Razor should have been the head coach in the All Black and that New Zealand rugby had missed a trick. My word, mate, it was your decision.
Some things don't add up.
You're absolutely right. Look, New Zealand rugby needs to get on board with the fact that Super Rugby and Mitre 10 Cup rugby need to have full grounds. You need to have those full grounds will then show up on on lots of people watching on TV, which will generate generate cash coming in. And it will make, it'll make the sponsorship and advertising around that come up, and it will maybe get to a level where it can be self-sustaining and not have to be a money drain on the All Blacks, which it currently is. Let's be honest about it. So yes, there is an element there that they do need to be doing it. It has to come through engagement. Look. If you threw me a few million, I could quite easily make basketball the number one sport in New Zealand more so than rugby, because the rugby guys at the top are just so complacent about it. When I take my girls to school, what are all the kids playing? They're playing touch rugby and basketball. The basketball is one of the biggest growing sports here. And unless rugby wakes up pretty damn quick, they're going to find that suddenly basketball is as big as rugby, and they're going to have no locks to speak of, because all the tall guys are going to go play basketball instead. Yep. And that's going to be a real problem for New Zealand rugby. They really are just too complacent we've got All Blacks fans, that's all we need. It's not what you need at all. You need engagement. You need to get your communities loving rugby again. There is still a hardcore there that do, but you need to get whole communities down to your rugby clubs at the weekends, spending the Friday nights there with the kids playing, kicking around in under the floodlights while the parents having a drink and chatting with their mates in the bar. That's what the rugby club should be. They should be this community space where people all gather every weekend, my view.
Paul, one game I was supposed to get to on the weekend, but didn't quite get round to it for one reason or another. But boy, it was a fantastic game. It was the Auckland Harbour game on Saturday evening. So absolutely superb game. I think crowd-wise, they probably had about 1,500 there, but it just deserved so much more. It was such a good quality game, probably in terms of Mitre 10 Cup games, up in the top half a dozen that we've seen this year easily. And you look around for the next best crowd, probably the Hawke's Bay Manawa 2 game didn't have too bad a crowd. I'm not too sure what the crowd was like down at the Domain on Saturday, Paul, but outside that, it was pretty poor across the board, reasonable sort of crowd at Tasman, but the rest of it, just not worth writing home about.
If Hawke's Bay can't get a decent crowd for a local derby, remember that Manawa 2 and Hawke's Bay were merged temporarily back in the day. So look, there's definitely a competition between those two, and it's a Ranfurly Shield game. If you can't get a decent crowd for that, then boy, oh boy, when can you, put bluntly? I mean, that's got everything. And also afternoon rugby in the sun. I mean, geez, everything was, they had everything in their favour. The fact that it wasn't a sellout Clash of the Vikings was that game. They should have a helmet trophy to play for every time, just to the Orange Vikings, hey, one team in black and white, one team in green and white, and they played in orange. Jeez, Tauranga gets a decent gets a good crowd for the for the ground it is, right? It's a tiny ground. It really is. It's not much bigger than a club ground, in all honesty. But when you got that, but they do get, they look, that gives that much more community feel. You've got your food vans in there. Look, it's a real family atmosphere. The players love it. Absolutely. I mean, when I talk to, go over and listen to my two interviews with Kurt Eklund and with Joe Weber. They both loved playing there. In the sunshine, with the local fans, with all the fans in there, great family atmosphere, wonderful place. You've got Hore throwing sweets into the crowd, which is always good fun. Love it. It is a decent. Now take that same team, play them in Rotorua, and boy, it is one man and his dog. The stadium, international stadium. It's designed to try and be a proper stadium. Now look, it's an old one, so it's not as good, but cold, freezing cold, doesn't have that community feel about it, and doesn't get anywhere near the same sort of crowds as well. Can I tell Joe Weber to get a proper haircut? I didn't, and I think he's had so much comments about his hair that he's not gonna listen to me on that one, I'm afraid, Ashwin. Look, they need to get into schools, they need to get some families going to rugby again. Let's be honest, Ashwin, and when I joined Ashwin and his mates in the West Stand, look, they've been sat there for the last 25 years together. That's what we need to get back to as well. Aaron, I'll never go to Albany, it's the pits. Well, yes, you don't want to go across that bridge, you know, monsters are on the other side of that bridge. Who knows what might be on the other side of the bridge, Aaron. Now, October Wright says, look, if fans are any All Blacks fans, then they are fair weather fans. Now, look, if you're not going to grow your audience, you get what you deserve. And New Zealand rugby has not been growing its Mitre 10 Cup audience, has not been growing its Super Rugby audience, and it's getting what it deserves. You can't blame the fans on this one. You've got to blame the marketing, in my view. Stephen.
Listen, I'm going to pull something off Facebook because I've had a fellow Lewis McClintock respond to what I posted. Now, he says here, I have to back the All Blacks and the New Zealand Rugby Union on this one. The reality is more players that get a taste of the All Blacks environment, the better for them and their province, as many returned with renewed motivation, ambition, standards, etc. Also, AB's full contact trainings are close to test match conditions, if not higher than match conditions, rather than playing most international teams are ranked below the 12. Yeah, that's, once again, that's all very, very well, but I think you've got to remember where you started or where you first buttered your bread. And usually it's at Mitre 10 Cup level. Now, I know in the past, the New Zealand Rugby Union have basically used the Mitre 10 Cup to their own benefit when players have come back from injury had no game time. They send them back to Mitre 10 Cup and make a big deal of it. Listen, so-and-so's playing today. This is his first game back. Or it might be Kieran Reid playing for Counties Manukau for the first time. So just to give you an example. So they also use it for their benefit as well. It just grates with me. It's obviously something that's not going to change soon unless there's some sort of revolution out there. But I know, talking to a few people who know coaches, they're not happy about it. They're not happy at all. We've got a current team, Canterbury, which is just a shadow of its former self. We know it's not a strong side, but if you start taking out, you know, some of their better performance, like Mitchell Dunshay and, you know, people out of the engine room and others who are key members to their team, yeah, sure, they're gonna struggle. You know, people might say, yeah, they're a big enough union and they should have the depth. And if you look at Tasman and other teams that are travelling nicely, but it's something that supporters don't forget, Paul, in a hurry. And I know one of these supporters I've been talking to has just gone, how should I say it, he's just gone the other way. He hopes the All Blacks get done in Australia, which is just, you know, quite an unbelievable outlook. I don't wish the All Blacks ill, if you know what I mean, but I can't say I'm a fan of, I wasn't a fan of Ian Foster before he got appointed, and right now I'm still not a fan of him. No, I'm not convinced about him as a coach.
Now, look, there's a balancing act. Players getting exposure to the international environment is very important. Don't get me wrong. But, look, it's a balancing act. It's about when you do it, how you do it, when you release the players. Having 10 or 15 players sat in the stands of an All Blacks test in suits, really? What a waste of time. Even if they go back to their clubs 2 days or 3 days before, look, you don't need them there for a full intensity captain's run. Let's be honest. Your captain's run is you don't need the guys there for that. Those spare guys, so send them back a day or two before, and they can at least play off the bench for their provinces. That way, they don't need to be there. And we have Ashwin and the grammar police correcting his brother there. So nice for careful with that one. Yes, old wooden north stand. Oh dearie me, we're going back some years at Eden Park there, aren't we, boys? You're showing your age, I think, a little bit there. Tim Kay in the chat, on the North Shore, the New Zealand Rugby Union should push touch rugby, limited contact rugby, and lower weight grade rugby. Lots of cautious mums and kids from non-traditional backgrounds for rugby. Basketball is big. Now, if you remember that Walter Mills, have I got the right name there? Roger Mills?
Walter Dixon, you're talking about the age limitation, yes. Grade?
That's right, yeah.
That's Walter Dixon, Roller Mills, and there's Bruce McLaren.
So Roller Mills is the level I'm thinking of. Roller Mills used to be a competitive competition, and I think last year they announced that they're actually going to remove the competitive piece and just have it as a fun piece and get rid of the age grade, get rid of the provincial level competition for it, and get players playing with their mates rather than necessarily grading up to have provincial level. The union that pushed that promoted that and got it going was North Harbour. So unsurprising there, Tim Kay, talking there about limited contact rugby, lower weight grade. That's exactly the direction that North Harbour are going in. They get it that there are a lot of cautious mums from non-traditional rugby backgrounds in their catchment area, and they are playing a lot more touch and trying to make sure they have the full age range of girls and women's rugby available as well. So look, to be fair, the provinces do try, but they just don't have the resources to do it properly. And I think a lot of them do run under some pretty traditional thought structures in their provincial unions. You can see that some of the ones that think a bit different, and you can see how they and you can see them doing doing some different things, but quite a few of them do still have the same guys in these roles who have been part of the union for 20-30 years. Now, look, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they do need to move with the times. They do need some fresh thinking at times. I know those guys love their provinces, right? And it's not through a lack of wanting their provinces to be bigger, have more people interested. It's just, it's more perhaps they just need to have some refreshed thoughts in there. If you're in the wood the whole time, sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees, and they've just been part of it and been so close to it for so long that perhaps they need taking out of it to and not saying lose their jobs, but I'm saying taken away, shown the bigger picture, and sent back with some fresh ideas.
Paul, is it possible somewhere in the future that some of these unions get so frustrated with New Zealand rugby, and we saw maybe a little bit of an example of the Bay of Plenty Steamers getting involved with rapid rugby, just more as a more in terms of looking for another cash revenue for the union? Do we see a time where a lot of unions just get, hey, we're frustrated with you, we're going to go fishing somewhere else, maybe look at getting our own competition up and running, how we go about funding it, I don't know. So almost a la like a breakaway from the New Zealand Rugby Football Union.
Right. So, okay then. I might have heard something on the grapevine.
there you go.
Okay, Heartland Championship sides were told that, look, you're not allowed to play the Heartland Championship, and in return we'll give you your normal funding, was basically the line for New Zealand Rugby. And so they all said, well, hey, we want our funding, so we won't. So yes, we agree to not play the Heartland Championship. As soon as we return to level one, what do they all go and do? Well, they all go and pick representative sides and start playing each other, in unofficial games. And New Zealand Rugby goes, oi, what are you guys doing? They're all like, well, hey, this is what we're going to do. We said we wouldn't do the Heartland Championship. We didn't say we wouldn't play at all. And so off they went and did that. And New Zealand Rugby was not impressed. They all got dragged into a room and got told off. And they all said, ha ha. And I believe they're all still getting their funding. You've got to remember, at the end of the day, the unions do vote and can make changes at New Zealand Rugby if they want to. So, yes, whilst if they all disobey en masse, which they all did bar one, then there's only so much New Zealand Rugby really can do. So, yes, there is an element of that that's happened in the Heartland Championships. You then go and look at, as you mentioned, Bay of Plenty have got an arrangement with China, with Rugby China, and set up a global rapid rugby team that was going to include some Chinese players, but due to COVID, obviously they couldn't travel, and so they weren't involved as part of the squad. So they did do that. You've also got Counties Manukau, who have got themselves a brand new CEO in that has changed the culture and the feeling around that province massively, from what I've experienced going to a few games there. And one of the first things
you're talking about the food, Paul.
I got fed. It's great.
You're talking about the food in the media box, aren't you?
Absolutely, I got a burger voucher. It was wonderful. So that was a good start. I didn't get any potatoes though. So where were my potatoes? What's one of the first things he's done? He's worked with Pacifica and with the New Zealand Rugby Players Association around trying to set up to be that sixth Super Rugby franchise. So yes, you are seeing. And of course, remember, counties are supposed to be, or are, sorry, not supposed to be, but are part or are affiliated with the Chiefs. So there they are trying to set up another Super Rugby franchise when they're already associated with a Super Rugby franchise. Now, whether they have ownership or not, I don't think they do, but I do think there is a relationship there. So yes, you are seeing a few do that, like that. If you think about the other, what I would say is the other most forward-thinking union, you look at Tasman, who, well, we'll get onto this later, but who are going to have a Black Ferns test down there, have managed to take a match of an All Blacks test down there when they were laughed at by New Zealand Rugby. When they said, hey, please can we have an All Blacks test? They said, ha, 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 you have to show you can bring us X revenue. And they said, what is that? Well, we can't tell you for commercial reasons. At which point they went around to all the other unions and said, how much do you pay for your tests? Went back to New Zealand Rugby and said, here, we're going to give you this much cash. That's more than anyone else offers you. you can hear about that story in my interview with their CEO. So that's public knowledge. My long talk with Tony Lewis, go listen to how he tells that story. Look, you do have certain unions like that. You then have other unions where they are stuck in their ways. You take ideas to them, they go nowhere, and they're like, well, why aren't we getting more people in? Well, because you've been doing the same thing for the past 15 years and you've been seeing your crowds go down. Comments somewhere up in the chat, Jack says, do you think my 10 Cup games should be played at smaller venues? No, I don't, because I think it should be getting bigger crowds. Do I think they will go to smaller venues? Absolutely, yes, because they can't afford to open, they can't afford to fund, or can't afford the prices that various councils are charging for the ground. Waikato Rugby, for example, only opens one stand. Is one example. So you're going to see, you're going to see different I've gone blank now. You're going to see different grounds getting used in the coming years, because it's just too expensive for some of these guys to pay the rent at these grounds.
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time, even before a couple of the penny drops with a couple of the bigger unions, and I'm mainly talking about Auckland and Wellington. I mean, so I think I know which colour. I can see. I can just visualise all those yellow seats at what do they call it in Wellington? Trust Stadium, or whatever it's called these days.
Sky Stadium.
Sky Stadium. Beg your pardon. It's shocking. I know they've actually got a couple of decent smaller grounds up a little bit further up the highway. I think Jerry Collins Stadium is not quite a nice stadium, quite a compact stadium. I know here in Auckland you've got Waitakere Stadium. I'm being a little bit biased. It's not too far away from where I live, but it is once again a nice compact stadium where the All Blacks train, and it'll just be a great atmosphere. And this is where you get your clubs and your interaction with the community back into it. Play a game there, or take another one out to Pakuranga, to Bell Park in Pakuranga. That'd be a nice venue with a bit of temporary seating, and aesthetically, it looks really good on the eye. Just a thought.
Yeah, and look, if you have a club, and one of the things, I mean, so Auckland, for example, what they could do is they could work with Waitemata. That Waitemata has already got a small stand up. You can say, what we'll do is we'll build a permanent stand that seats 1,000 people, and off we go. Because look, they don't get many more than that. I wouldn't have thought. Maybe they get 4,000 or 5,000 in Eden Park, but on the whole, look, they don't get that many. So you could put up a permanent stand, add some temporary stands around it, and hey presto, you've got a big enough ground with a family atmosphere. If they wanted to work with some of the clubs that actually own their grounds, do that. I'm thinking of club sides like Melville, for example, here in Hamilton. Again, there's potential for building a mini stadium there too. So we'll see how it all pans out. But it's a very different structure, isn't it, to the way that it's done in the UK, where they own their stadiums and that's how they make money. One of the things that is through the stadium, one of the things that MLR has said is that all franchises have to own their stadiums. Well, that's their sort of aspirational goal, because they realize that that's where how they can generate income. to become viable. We should have a quick chat about the Black Ferns and what's coming up, really, or women's rugby. So on the 7th of November, we have Possibles versus Probables at North Harbour Stadium, which I think could be a really interesting clash. Look, it's what we really wanted for the All Blacks. Instead, we got North versus South, which is a bit like that, but not really. I think there's a bit of needle in Possibles versus Probables that I don't think there would have been, or that there wasn't really for North versus South. Fantastic game to watch, but not really a needle game. Then on the 14th, the Black Ferns will play a New Zealand Barbarians team. Possibles versus Probables. Congratulations to the County's Manukau women's head coach, who is coaching the Probables team for that one. Chad Shepherd is going to be the head coach with Anna Richards from Auckland Storm and Scott Manson from Otago Spirit. So are going to be doing the Possibles. The Probables is Rodney Gibbs from Bay of Plenty with Melissa Rusco from Canterbury and Willie Walker from North Harbour. The Barbarians, Rodney Gibbs, Chad Shepherd and Whitney Hansen are going to be doing the Barbarians side coaching. So good to see Farrah Palmer Cup coaches getting a go at that. So yes. On that Saturday, Black Ferns versus New Zealand Barbarians, but also New Zealand Defence Force versus New Zealand Police. That could be an interesting one. I can see that being very physical. I guess is the nice way of putting it in that one. So women's New Zealand Defence Force against women's New Zealand Police at 11:35 a.m. That's then followed up by a Rugby World Cup 2021 qualification match between Samoa and Tonga,
speaking of physical
games, yes, so Samoa women versus Tonga women, and then finally that Black Ferns versus New Zealand Barbarians. So I'll tell you, Saturday 14th of November, I know where I'm going to try and be and where I'm going to try and get a media pass for. Whether I'll get one or not, I don't know, but boy oh boy, that's those three games look do sound good.
Well, I know 14th of November is a very big day for rugby.
Oh shit! Yes, I can't go, can I?
Exactly. Well, I will be, but I've got to make it back to Auckland for some reason. That particular day, 14th of November, I'm going to be up in Kaikohe for the North and Waikato game. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of crowd they attract for that game up in the far north. Kaikohe, of course, about it. Our 10 minutes, around about a 70-minute trip north of Whangarei. Hopefully Northland will probably at that stage probably be scrapping like anything to stay in the top four. It's starting to close up, especially in that championship division. Ashwin Ranchard's going, hey, I'm not too sure what that's all about, but maybe...
I think it's all about bringing these around to his house for his 50th birthday party. So yes, that's what that's all about. I'll be round there for the party. Maybe I won't be going to those women's rugby games.
In the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back in Auckland.
And then Saturday, 21st of November, the Black Ferns versus New Zealand Barbarians down in Trafalgar Park, Nelson. They were due to host a game down there, Black Ferns versus England. It hadn't been announced. But I think it's been mentioned now that that was the plan. And instead they're having Black Ferns versus New Zealand Barbarians down there in Nelson after their very successful All Blacks versus Argentina game they had down there. So look, if you're in Auckland on Saturday, 14th November, and you're not invited around to Arshwin's for his 50th birthday party, then get down to Trust Arena in Waitakere. Because I tell you that those three matches, they look tasty, don't they? Let's be honest. Where are we now? Where are we going to go next? Maitland and COVID bubbles. Now look, you can decide whatever reasons you like, but look, we are very lucky here in New Zealand in the fact that we are at, we've earned it. But being at COVID level one, we can travel around absolutely fine. But not so true over in Europe now. The England versus Barbarians game last weekend had to be cancelled after a group of players decided that they would breach the COVID bubble. Now, the way that a lot of sports have worked, and if we look at like the NBA, they all went into one location, basically shut themselves inside a castle, inside a Disney castle, and kept everyone out so that they could actually play their games. If you look at cycling, they have like a moving bubble around where the teams have got to isolate, wear masks whenever they're outside in public, etc. We look at the way that the NRL had to work over in Australia, where they had COVID protocols that players weren't allowed to go out to restaurants and things. So they set something similar up for the Barbarians head of England, at which point 9 players, I think it was, including ex-England captain Chris Robshaw, decided to go out for dinner and breached the bubble and couldn't stay in the hotel and have dinner. They actually went out. So hence they didn't play. That means that Sean Maitland now was one of those players who breached that bubble, and hence he has been excluded from the Scotland squad now because he breached the bubble. And so therefore he can't get around the other Scotland players because he could infect them if he is infected. Stephen, I've got to say, NRL, you've got to tip your hat, haven't you, that on the whole, I mean, NRL players are not known for being well-behaved. And yet on the whole, they did follow the bubble. If we're talking about 99% of the players, there was the odd one who didn't.
No? There was the odd one. Ironically, it was probably more the management that needed a slap on the hand than what the players. But I think if we carried a book at the start of when Peter Valandis came out and pretty much muted that the competition will go ahead, they'd be in their own bubble, I think we would have laid some odds that this ain't going to happen. Somewhere along the line, they will stuff this up, because as Paul, you often say, it is the sport that keeps on giving. And but I'll tell you what, it gave us everything on the field and more. And you've got to give them a lot of credit, the rugby league players and the fraternity. I think they realised the importance of the scale. Sure, they didn't get the really big crowds. It seemed really odd seeing that NRL final the other night with only 40,000 people in ANZ Stadium. But yeah, full credit to them. They have done ever so well.
Yeah, you say the players and the coaches. Okay, a couple of them messed up and stuffed up and got excluded for like a week or two while they went through their own, while they re-quarantined. Or we re-isolated, shall I say. But on the whole, look, they did it. For players of the stature of Sean Maitland, of Chris Robshaw, who are supposed to be senior players, who are supposed to be sensible, leading, I mean, something like ex-England, we're talking about ex-international captain here, ex-England captain players, they should know and not be, I mean, they signed up to certain protocols. It's not like that they didn't know what they were. They signed a piece of paper with the protocols on. Cyclists, look, they're very self-disciplined. Otherwise, they wouldn't. Whereas I think team players quite often have everything organized for them, and so don't have that same personal responsibility. Whereas a lot of cycling, if you don't go out and train, it's up to your thing. So you've got to say that I'm concerned to see how much of the Six Nations and the Autumn Nations Cup, or whatever they're calling it now, will go ahead, because look, all those players from France, England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, Italy, Fiji and Georgia are all going to have to be in their own bubbles, we're going to see how well that goes. Now, Aaron, you do make a good point there. English players, sensible. Yes, we just remember jumping into harbours and dwarf throwing. And they generally enjoy themselves when they come down here to New Zealand, don't they? But you'd hope that they would get this, and clearly they just haven't. So rugby players, seriously, folks. I'm talking to players basically based in Europe, and also probably for the Major League Rugby players when that kicks back off in the USA, they just got to stick. They just got to understand what the protocols are to preserve their bubbles and keep them going. Otherwise, they're just not going to get to play because it'll collapse.
Paul, I was going to say, while we're in the sort of Northern Hemisphere, that we want to touch on a couple of those games on the weekend. Obviously, France and Wales. The French, very impressive, even though it was more of a practice game.
Yeah, look, it was a warm-up game. Wales came out out of the traps really well and led 10-0, I think it was. And I was thinking, yep, my initial prediction was, look, the Welsh team have been together a bit more. This French team, there's been animosity between the top 14 and the French Union. And I thought, look, they wouldn't have had preparation time. What I guess I didn't take into account is a lot of those players have played with each other through all the age grades from like the age of 16. So perhaps they don't need like 2-3 weeks of pre-camp before a game, because they've just played so much with each other over the years.
So there's
an element there of once they figured out the Welsh defence, boy oh boy, did they just cut it to pieces.
Isn't it refreshing? There's a real good mix between a style they seem to have found, but boy, they're starting to show that they can now finish off chances. You know, French teams in probably the last decade or two have always created a lot of chance, can't always play for 80 minutes, but this French side, man, they are well on cue for 2023, and they're going to be a dangerous beast. You'd be hoping to avoid them in their group come 2023.
Yeah, remember, folks, that we have got the draw for 2023 coming up. They're using the world rankings from the beginning of the year to decide seedings for that, not from these ones. Look at players like Teddy Thomas, right? Look, can be a bit of a liability, or has historically been a bit of a liability at times. Boy, His chip over the top catch and score was very impressive. Simon, France, your dark horses for the Autumn Nation Cup? I don't see how they can be dark horses, to be honest with you. I think they're going into this as a joint favourites with England, because England obviously making semi-finalists, France having knocked over Wales. You've got to say, yeah, Wales going in as joint favourites, I would have thought. Look, it's going to be tight, isn't it? Ireland looking good, England looking good, Wales semi-finalists last year at the Rugby World Cup, England semi-finalists, obviously. It has all the makings of a cracking tournament.
And of course, Ireland far too good for Italy, but we probably knew that, Paul. So that gives them a 1-point lead. But how does this now play out, Paul?
Well, England play Italy in the next round, get a 5-point bonus win, and win the tournament. It's what's going to happen. Yeah, Ireland play France, I think it is. Should be a cracking game this weekend, Ireland-France. Definitely want to watch. England-Italy. I mean, I'll watch it because I'm an England fan. But if you're not, don't bother, folks. That's going to be. I didn't bother watching Ireland versus Italy, to be honest with you. I did watch Scotland versus Georgia. And boy, oh boy, Georgia were off the pace. So, all these people pushing for Georgia to make it into the Six Nations. Yeah.
They're
well off the pace. Remember, they still have never beaten a tier one team, including Italy. They keep losing to Italy every time they play them. So look, Georgia are not. It's going to be interesting to see how Georgia do go in this Nations Cup. But boy, they're going to be. I think they're on the end of a bunch of spankings.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul.
One of the things that Aaron says that old people are in bed by 8 p.m. So I'm glad that you're watching this in bed at the moment, guys, because it's after 8 p.m. We must be your bedtime ready, Aaron.
You opened yourself up for that, Aaron. You opened yourself up for that one.
Oh, dear me.
Just before we go, I should mention one group that won't be in bed early on Thursday because we've got the final of the Auckland, the Sky Auckland under 21 competition coming up. We've obviously hadn't quite got around to covering a lot of that game, those games over the last few weeks or so, but we've got the final coming up on Thursday at 8 p.m. and I'll just fill you in shortly in terms of who is playing in that final. It's the West Rangers playing the East Tomoana, and that game kicks off at 10 past 6 at Waitemata Park. And yeah, we've seen some pretty good rugby in that tournament, but that'll be preceded by the Central Kings and South Rising. If you're around at 10 past 4, it'll probably be quite warm conditions. It's been quite sunny in Auckland over the last 4 days, so I'm expecting that weather to continue. So I will make an effort to at least get along to that second game. That first game is a little bit too early, but I'll check out that final and try and see if I can get a couple of interviews. But we've seen some pretty good footy, and speaking of physicality, we've seen some very, very big lads running around in that comp.
Absolutely. I thought the South Rising were the team to beat. Now, look, the teams have been made up of the various clubs. Obviously, the South Rising are East Tamaki and some of those teams down there. And as we already know, that Ponies, Ponsonby, Marist, etc., all have poached all their decent players, all their top players every year. So, a lot of them go... A lot of them get poached, but yeah, good to see Austrian saw that South Rising beat the Rangers in that one. And look, it's good that they've put this competition together. This was put together by the clubs, and then Auckland Rugby came on board afterwards. But the clubs wanted to do it. The clubs organised it, and good on them. Again, another one of those things where the clubs, not waiting for the unions, not waiting for the hierarchies to do things for them, but actually doing things for themselves. Something else we talked about earlier with the provinces and New Zealand rugby.
Yeah, definitely. Paul, I was about to say a real heavy influence of particular club coaches, of course, Rory Lord and Brett Simmons, both involved with Waitemata, and of course, Junior Polianganga involved with the East Toa Moana side, of course, involved with Papatoetoe rugby. So It'll be quite interesting to see how this plays out.
Yep, should be. Aaron says, yeah, go where the big bucks are, Paul. If there's big bucks in Auckland Club Rugby, boy, oh boy. No, there isn't, folks. There might be some bucks, but not big bucks. That's for certain. So, Stephen, thank you very much. It's been a very enjoyable one. Folks, don't forget, we're back at 7 a.m. every single morning. Now, I do have one slight problem tomorrow morning, is the fact that my mobile phone refuses to charge. So hopefully I will wake up in time to do the show. But that's my alarm clock, and I'm not quite sure what to do otherwise. That'll be my number one job tomorrow, is getting that fixed, except I might be still involved with election work. So good luck. Thank you very much, Stephen. Don't forget, folks, to join us for that. And we'll be back tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. with the Standoff Show, covering all the NRL action, particularly news around that grand final. So do join us for that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.